James Dixon and Jennifer Lanier, Break Legs on both of your productions. Thank you for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, D-May. Thanks for having us.
And I wanted to give a lot more highlights of Outright, but we've had such a great discussion. I'll just do two quick ones. The Tarot Show by Kate Mira is back, and it's performing a tarot reading for the whole audience, and that's on June 16th. And talented writer, singer, and actor Ernie LaJoie has created a new musical. He's workshopping the Pursuit of Happiness. That's happening June 25th and 26th at 7 p.m. All of these shows are at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 North Interstate Avenue. Find out more at facebook.com/Fuse Theater Ensemble, as well as the rest of their schedule. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. So check us out at facebook.com/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm D-May Roberts. We're going out with more music by David Ornette Cherry at David Ornette Cherry. Cherry.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events. Located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtime, and more information online at cstpdx.com. Now it's time for Art Focus.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jessie Spies-Werner. She is Associate Director of Graduate Studies at PNCA, and she's here to talk about the 2019 MFA exhibition. It's on now at the PNCA Glass Building at 2139 North Kirby Avenue, and it closes on June the 11th at 6 p.m. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Jessie.
Hi.
The show closes today. If you're listening live, you've only got till 6 o'clock. But it is a pretty amazing show. You have all these MFA, these masters artists, and they have a huge space, old warehouse factory in North Portland. And they've really been given a lot of space. It's a beautiful building with tons of light. That's why they call it the Glass Building, right? PNCA.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell us, how long did the artists have to work on this work? And what is it? Is it their degree show?
Yeah, so it's a two-year program. These artists have really been working towards this for the entire 2 years. They go through a proposal process about a semester before. So in about 4 months, they've really put the entirety of the project together and created this work for the exhibition.
So how long have they known about the space before they actually start making the work? Because some people are working really big.
Yeah, and site responsively. They've known for about a year. So they've been able to formulate the projects, and as they went through the proposal process, have really specific ideas around how they would use the space and how big they could go and things like that.
Mm-hmm. As you walk in the door, there's a kind of a lobby area, and that's been taken up by four artists. And they represent some of the different programs, all three of the different programs. What are they?
MFA in Collaborative Design Program, which is essentially an MFA program where the students are trying to tackle a problem and solve the system through thinking about design. We also have the MFA in Print Media Program, which is more printmaking and print-based, thinking about things that happen in multiples. And then the MFA in Visual Studies program, which is a completely interdisciplinary fine arts-based program.
Mm-hmm. So the one in collaborative design is a woman called Ophir L. Boher.
Mm-hmm.
And her work is, they're like big jumpsuits, right? They're,
yeah.
They're what do you call them, tutis?
Yeah, tuta.
Tuta, yeah. An Italian kind of workers' overall thing, like a one piece.
Yeah.
So what was she getting at by making these?
Yeah. So Ophir's work is really trying to tackle or scrutinize the fast fashion industry. So one of the ways that one of the things she's done is she's gone in and she's created this series of workshops where she can teach people how to reuse fabrics and reuse materials to make simple garments. And the idea is that these garments are essentially for everyone, and that a novice could make these articles of clothing for themselves that they could wear. So she did kind of a simple shift dress. There's a pattern, and she instructs people how to use sewing machines and how to navigate through pattern making, and then also the tuta, which is basically a jumpsuit. It's very in fashion right now, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That has this history as an Italian workers' garment, kind of like you said.
So this really is fast fashion fabric. A lot of it is recognizable, you know, Levi jean pockets, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, rayon and
yeah,
all the stuff you find at the bins, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
So it's all about reusing
yeah.
wasted material.
Yeah.
And what did she find as she made the two different garments?
Well, you know, I think in working with people, you learn so much. And one of the things that she learned through the workshops is that certain garments were a little bit easier to use than others. To create than others. So the dress was a little bit simpler for the novice seams person to create over the tuta. But all that means is she learned about time management a little bit differently with a group of people.
There's a piece in that corner. It's, I think, five video monitors, and there's a woman just stuffing things in her mouth.
Yeah.
And this is great. This is like Bill Viola, but
yeah.
50 years later. And in one, she's just stuffing glitter. Another one, she's spitting out real teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, she's got hair, like a hairball thing that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the other two? Do you remember?
One of them, she shaves her head.
Oh,
her
yeah.
name is Sarah Cabell.
Yeah.
She truly did shave her head. One take only for that one.
She was
one.
Crying during that.
Yeah, I think it was emotional. That work, I think, in a lot of ways is about her as she uses herself. It's herself depicted in all the videos. Her as a female-identifying artist, basically kind of working through some specific issues and traumas that she's experienced as a woman, and putting those on full display. And in doing that, she kind of she aims to get at some of the tropes around, quote, womanhood. So things like hair and having long hair as an identifier of womanhood. One of the other ones is she actually uses her own menstrual blood and kind of puts it on as if it's makeup. Puts it on her
face.
Oh,
I thought that was like strawberry juice or
nope.
something. Oh.
The real
fresh
deal. Fresh blood, yeah.
Well, that's how video art should be, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're striking. They're really similar framing, and she uses this fake cloud pattern background that's kind of just supposed to be this like excessively cheerful, kind of almost satirical framework for these acts, these curious acts that she's performing in the mm-hmm. in the videos.
Well, let me just jump ahead, because there is a big three big pieces there. Rugs.
Oh, yeah.
Made in the they're using Kardashian images from Instagram, but they're white and black rugs, so they're like line drawings. Who is that? Lauren Prado.
Yeah.
So tell us how she made them, because they're like 15 feet tall.
They are 15 feet tall. They're these massive tufted rugs, and one of the ways that she's able to kind of create these in a much quicker way than by hand, which would be latch hook, I think it's called, is she has a tufting gun that is essentially connected to a ball of yarn, and she's able to fill areas way more quickly than she would be able to if she was doing it by hand. And so that one of the things that does, I think it allows her to really draw with it in a really specific way. There's gesture to the way that the image is realized on the rugs that I think really comes out because she's using this specific mode of working.
Mm-hmm. These wooden frames are huge, and I guess you have this lattice of threads, mm-hmm, into which you shoot the wool, mm-hmm, to make the lines. So you kind of fill in with the white, mm-hmm, and then you draw with the black.
Yeah.
The effect is, it kind of looks like when you take a photo and you use a filter and turn it into a sketch. It kind of looks like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if she did that, or was she freehand drawing, or what?
She freehand draws, but I feel like that association is a fantastic one for this work. That because the images on these rugs are of the Kardashians' Instagrams, and you, mm-hmm, see all the aspects of Instagram. You see it written at the top. You see how many likes it had and all those icons that go along with that. And so I think for her, breaking it down into this line work is just, it's part of her process, and I think it it makes using textiles in this way possible to create the work. But any association with filtering or really things that are processed on a phone for consumption by the masses, I think is great for this, mm-hmm, work.
One of them got 4.5 million likes.
Yeah. And you can go find that image because, of course, it's pulled from, I think, Kourtney Kardashian's Instagram. So I went...
Chloe, please.
Oh, excuse me. I went and looked it up and found it. And, it has a couple million more likes now.
Actually, it might have been Kourtney. I wrote down Chloe, but who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
Back in the lobby area, Amber Marsh has these pieces where she made a kind of a little book that goes in those narrow sort of pamphlet holders you see at every tourist stop. So there's a thing like Kells Brewery or, mm-hmm, Ski Bowl. And then she made this little booklet to put in there. What's in the book?
Yeah, essentially she's created this kind of disguised pamphlet that is really looking at creating space in the winter sports industry specifically, which she has a history working in, for people of color and queer people of all kinds. Basically something outside of the standard norm, which is white men, some women. And so she presents it in such a way to where it could be found amongst, when you go to these kinds of resorts, there's all these pamphlets, things to do, outside activities. And so it really fits in with that aesthetic. But ultimately, the content inside is asking questions and presenting different options and shows you some data. She's a collaborative design student, so she's thinking about the entire system. Mm-hmm. And it's presented in such a way so that it could coexist in any of those places.
But she hasn't been making them and like slipping them in the travel Portland office.
I don't think
office.
Yet.
No, but okay. But is that the idea? Is it meant to be a kind of guerrilla activity? Was it?
I don't know. I think it's certainly an option. She's done such a beautiful job creating the actual object. I don't see why not. I think, mm-hmm, it would be a matter of making lots of them.
Jen Bacon, her real name, is a photographer who does anything, any kind of photography that doesn't need a camera, right? What does she do, like pinhole cameras?
Absolutely, yeah. Jen primarily works cameraless, and so she works with photograms a lot, and that's...
What's that?
A photogram is essentially where you eliminate a camera, you eliminate an enlarger, and she mostly works in silver gelatin, which is kind of the old school wet darkroom from the days of yore. It essentially means you place an object on light-sensitive paper, and then flash it with light and it creates a silhouette. That's in essence what a photogram does. But she also takes objects out of the picture often and works with purely chemicals on paper. And so with this work, that's precisely what she's done. She's been working for the last couple of years really on questioning the processes of photography and questioning what constitutes a photograph and what makes a photograph actually that thing. And so for her project in the MFA exhibition, she's essentially processed a 98-foot by 4-foot wide roll of darkroom paper only with developer. So what that means in that process is it hasn't been stopped. It'll continue to be responsive to light, and it hasn't been fixed, so it's not stable. And so she's draped this giant roll of, in essence, black paper over the rafters in the glass building, and over time, the image shifts and changes. It's mm-hmm. slow to progress, but it's in this constant state of developing.
So it started out black. Did you see on day one?
Yeah, I saw it on day one.
Black?
Yeah, black and gray.
And now it's kind of black with dusty kind of smears
yeah.
on it.
Yeah, the chemicals themselves dry in an interesting way. And of course, it's like collecting some dust and things from the space. But what that's allowing you to see is all the different ways that fluid moved across the paper.
Mm-hmm. And it's very sculptural. I mean, it's kind of swagged, or what do you call that? It goes up and down.
Yeah, it's like swoops.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's huge. It probably goes up 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
It's very dramatic.
It is.
There's another piece that's very dramatic just next to it, really. It's a big circle of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Lauren Goding.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that? I mean, you kind of, it's like, you know, at the Festival of Lights, there's a lot of things where you go in and you walk inside, and there's like a little maze, and mm-hmm. that feels like that. You're going in, but it's fabric.
Yeah, it's labyrinthine in the way that she's created the entry points. She has these rings that that hang and drape fabric from them. They're naturally dyed fabric, mm-hmm. bark and tees and things like that, with some different gestural marks made on them. And so as the viewer, when you enter into that work, the fabric is really light and airy, so it just kind of moves all around you the entire time that you walk through the space.
Mm-hmm. But it is arranged. There's a wooden frame that hangs it from the ceiling.
Yeah.
That she made. A lot of these people made their own stuff, didn't they?
Yes.
They're kind of handy.
Yeah, they're pretty handy. The system that she actually hung them from is utterly stunning. I mean, if you go see the exhibition, and you have to look up when you experience that work, because it's brilliant and massive. The widest ring of, there's three rings that kind of fit inside one another. The largest one is 17 feet. I mean, it's just huge.
Mm-hmm.
But she made it all by hand and constructed this system that would work best for these fabric pieces to hang in the way that she really wanted to. So there's incredible vision there. For sure.
The space has, I think, 8 little kind of mini galleries. It's spaces for people to put 2D, mostly 2D work, mm-hmm. away from the bigger stuff. And there's a really great one. Heather Boyd, a photographer, has just made these huge prints.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, it's kind of like one idea done several times. But mm-hmm. so just tell us about it. The one I saw was, you're looking at a coat rack, and then you realize someone in the clothes,
yeah.
sort of hiding.
Yeah, essentially she's created these large-scale photographs where she's using herself, and so they're self-portraits in a lot of ways, kind of hidden in domestic spaces, hidden underneath couch cushions, or kind of, like you said, hanging in a coat rack, lying on the kind of bottom shelf of a coffee table. And I think a lot of the work that Heather's been doing, and especially with these images, is like questioning the history and the problematics that run alongside women existing in domestic spaces. And I think she's doing that and proving that with these kind of hilarious images that at once are poignant and a little bit cheeky, which is one of my favorite things about them.
So the coffee table she's hiding under, is it her body?
It is, yeah.
So she's taking the pictures and in them?
You know, I don't suspect she's using a self-timer, so she's probably using a cable release because she is a traditional photographer who works on film.
And these are medium format?
I believe those are large format. She's worked with all these different techniques, including medium, but I think these are large.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a view camera, which is a whole contraption, but mm-hmm. a cable release, I believe. But we should go look and
okay.
see. We could probably spot it in there.
But there's the makeup mirror and all the makeup on the table, and then she's like hiding under the table.
Yeah.
Does she go into the whole story? There's a slight narrative to these.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of the images she could certainly speak to about, you know, it's her space, and I feel like that's important to this work. But I feel like there's also an aspect that allows other people to kind of enter into the space that she is in terms of what she's thinking when she's making this work, because the spaces are not so utterly unique and outlandish that it couldn't be my home or someone else's home, you know.
Alexis Day, tell mm-hmm. us about her work.
Yeah, Alexis's work is extraordinary. She essentially uses all different kinds of materials to create these bricolage tapestry works of domestic spaces that she's essentially complicating. They're mostly interiors, but not exclusively. She uses some exteriors. Complicating and thinking about how that relates to the complexities of and the fallibility of memory and perception. So what I mean by complicating these spaces is, say if you're in one piece, you're looking at the exterior of a house, and in the window she's placed another image of an impossible interior, an impossible inside of a house with a perspective that just wouldn't necessarily work.
Mm-hmm. So these things look, you know, they're like four by 5 feet, four yeah. by six, and they're kind of fabric.
Yeah.
So that there are tears in them, and through a tear you might see another object or just a shiny Mylar blanket. And then the fabric itself, sometimes it's got a photo printed on it,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's painted, and they're just very kind of disturbing surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what am I looking at here? And you know it's a room or something like that, but they're very kind of surreal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of them. I mean, they work very hard to
And there are
produce,
so many more.
So many.
She is incredibly prolific. So she really, of course, like anyone else in the exhibition as well, edited down for the best for this specific exhibition.
Mm-hmm. What was her name again?
Alexis Day.
Day?
Yeah.
Okay, I feel like she might be popping up on 9th Avenue pretty soon.
Probably.
Julian Adolf has a little room with books on the wall, and he's very much into critical theory. It's Walter Benjamin, as Jacques
mm-hmm.
Derrida.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's done is taken books, sort of printed his own copy with most of the words missing, and there are just select phrases and sections. And he's given them all this red kind of paper binding. And then there's a lot of writing on the wall. What's he getting at?
Yeah, Julian's kind of rewriting things the way that he wants it to be written, I think, in a lot of ways. And so there's these vinyl pieces on the wall where he's kind of creating concrete poems, I think, in a lot of ways, in the way that he's omitted words. But they're also, the words are arranged in an X, or they don't follow a linear pattern the way that writing does, as we know it and read it in English. He also is interested in the mark making that goes along with annotation, and so that's present in all of the works as well. And Julian's so fascinating because he's got this deep interest and adoration for critical theory. He's also one of our dual degree candidates. We offer this track where students can, in 3 years instead of two, earn an MA in critical studies or an MFA in any one of those three programs, visual studies mm-hmm. in Julian's case. And so he has worked very hard over 3 years to earn 2 degrees. And what I love about this project is it really synthesizes his line of inquiry here. It's taking his interest in critical theory and realizing it in a visual way.
some people built little rooms. There's two little rooms. Robin Cohn Murakami, beautiful mm-hmm. name, built this like shed. It's like a tiny house, mm-hmm. but really, really nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
But built it there in the space. And you go in, there's a couch, there's like tea that you steep yourself. There's a little bookshelf and a chair. And you can sit down. Photos of probably someone's parents or grandparents on the wall. What's that piece called? Do you have any idea? Or it's okay, you don't have to say the name.
I think it's called On Remembrance or maybe something of the like. Oh yeah, just Remembrance.
Okay.
Yeah, Robin's, I mean, she really did an extraordinary job. I mean, she put in flooring, she put in windows, she put in a working door into this space. And one of her objectives was to really create a space where viewers in an art context, like the one that her work would be in for this exhibition, could engage with reading. And a lot of that is setting an atmosphere where there's quiet, there's tea, there's comfort. Mm-hmm. And so she's also created these books that she's written of poetry and some prose that viewers are invited to engage with in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the conceptual drive for this work comes from relationships with her family and ideas around remembering, having lost her father. The idea of remembering is extremely important to her.
Right next to it is Russell Wood's, his own little shed. And it really is like a woodworker's shed. You go in and all the tools are there. There's a bench. But the bookshelves, the kind of books are in, but there's wood kind of blocking the empty spaces around it. That's the only kind of conceptual bit to it, you know. What are you supposed to go in there and, like, touch things and make yourself at home?
Yeah, and the idea is that that space is actually set up for Russell to go in and work throughout the exhibition, which he's done.
Is he?
He's built this little 8x8 hexagon. And everything is custom. So Russell's interests are really focused in the idea around making and ideas around work. So the work itself sets a stage for production. So there's all these little exciting nuances in this little tiny workroom that he has. For instance, the chair is set to like a specific height for him. And instead of just taking a wheelie chair and hiking up the height, he's actually on the lathe turned a custom height thing that he like inserted into the chair so that it cannot be moved up or down. It's specifically set for his height.
Yeah.
Books. These specific books on his shelf are custom cut out into a bookshelf so that only that book can fit there.
These kinds of things.
Yeah.
Right. And I do get the feeling that it's okay to touch a lot of this work.
Yeah.
There's a great section called Fragile, Please Touch.
Yeah.
By Jessie Presley Gruzin. And she's a really good writer. And so she's written all over the walls. And there's these little things about the pain she feels and going to the acupuncturist and things like that. It's all very kind of emo, but then there's this giant arm in the middle. It's got a soft arm about 15 feet long on the floor. And what with her arm?
Yeah, Jessie's use the arm and images of arms for as long as I've known them in their work, and it has to do with they have extreme unexplained chronic pain in that arm, and so creating something that is soft and accessible, it's kind of not tufted, but it's padded, this arm, covered in nylons, and I think like a lot of what they're trying to do is elucidate the pain that she's experienced and potentially the chronic pain that others could be feeling out there, because it's unexplained. There's plenty of it.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, I just wanted to mention there's a dirt bike at the back. It's been bedazzled, and it really belongs to a painter, Jess Iams.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying that right? And these are great paintings. They're very brightly, there are a lot of bright green in them, like fluorescent green, but they're images of sort of landscapes with signs, you know, bar signs and that kind of thing in them. And then there's a little table with a bunch of perfume bottles and cacti in tiny little ones. Mm-hmm. You get the feeling, you know, there's a whole personal mythology going on here. But what's the dirt bike for?
Yeah, well, you nailed it. I mean, Jess's work is really driven by this personal narrative. And so in the paintings, there's all, you know, you see abstract areas, while other areas are depictions of a child, other depictions of her as an adult. And then, yeah, the dirt bike is really related to Jess's person, like a specific personal story, but I think generally speaking, it's an opportunity for her to escape, or it speaks to escaping from what was a really terrible situation in her youth, in her childhood.
Well, it's an amazing show. There's so much work, and all very high quality. I would say if you're listening on a podcast, you've got a few days to get down there. If you're at your radio, you better get down there today. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Jessie Spee Swerner. She's the Associate Director of Graduate Studies at the Pacific Northwest College of Art. And she was here talking about the 2019 MFA exhibition on now at the Glass Building, 2139 North Kirby Avenue, and closes at 6 p.m. on June the 11th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Jessie.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall in Vancouver, Washington. The theme of the 7th annual Juneteenth celebration is Together We Rise. This theme addresses the idea that together we rise above the fray of hatred, despair, and discord. The celebration features a job fair, panels, awards, contests, an art gallery, live entertainment, and more. Again, that's the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found